Around with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and it is cussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to a Friday that is here in the hills and hollers of almost level West by God, Virginia. A beautiful one. Oh, this has been one of those springtime days that is very like a kiss. It has been beautiful here, but being as how it is beautiful, we are told that it's all going to turn to crap by Sunday. So, it's been one of those enjoy it while you can kind of days. Golden light streaming through the windows. The windows of the south-facing studios here bathe in warm spring light. A day to remind you that better days are coming. Not just weather-wise, but world-wise. It can get better. We're in charge of whether it gets better, but it can most assuredly get better. For my money, one of those things that will make it all immensely better, at least for this nation, is the Employees Free Choice Act, EFCA. Of course, you know I feel that way about it. You know, it was just in the last week that we found out that the senator from Arkansas, Blanche Lincoln, a Democrat in name only, had decided to side with her corporate masters instead of working people, not only in Arkansas, but across the country as well. Blanche Lincoln sees no need for unions. Blanche Lincoln sees no need for a level playing field. Blanche Lincoln said recently that the EFCA would divide America too much in the fight against the recession, the depression, the Wall Street generated collapse of our economy. Blanche Lincoln is, in a word, an idiot. I hate to speak so strongly like that, especially about a Democrat, but there's not a whole lot that's really Democratic about Blanche Lincoln. She is, after all, a member of that group of mugwumps, that Evan Bayh gang of moderates whose sole goal is to make sure that nothing liberal, nothing progressive happens in America. And she's proud of it. And she's proud of the fact that she sent off one of her staffers to go and become a corporate lobbyist for Wally World. She's proud of it. She's proud of the Chinese crap that Wally World sells. She's proud of the poisons they've put in the dog food. She's proud of the melamine in the baby formula. Oh, she's proud, Blanche Lincoln is. But me, I'm proud of something else. I'm proud of American working folk. You know, it wasn't too long back that we learned that one of the primary reasons hundreds did not die in an icy, wet grave in the Hudson River in New York was because of the calm professional behavior of a lot of union members in an air in a ditching of a commercial airliner in New York City. Union members from the pilot to the crew of the plane, the flight attendants, to the first responders, the police, the fire, the emergency rescue people, they were all union members. And it was thanks to the union that they were able to respond to a truly panic-laden situation without giving in to panic's worst symptoms. Trained and retrained, they got the job done and saved lives. So I was all the more impressed, all the more thrilled earlier today when I saw NBC News footage of the homecoming of the crew of the Maersk Alabama. It was inspiring, to say the least. And so, we'll let the report speak for itself. Because this wasn't just heroism, and heroism doesn't just happen. These things happen as a result of training. And the training doesn't come from the corporations. Most usually, it comes, it comes from organized labor. In particular, third engineer John Cronin of the Maersk Alabama offered up his explanation for how events transpired aboard that freighter.
And he was bleeding all over, so I got first aid.
And on two separate occasions, I was looking down the barrel of an AK-47.
With his fiancée nearby, third engineer John Cronin declined to provide details on how the crew defended themselves, concerned that might jeopardize other merchant sailors still at sea.
How did you retain control of the ship?
We're American seamen. We're union members. We stuck together and we did our jobs.
Damn, that's inspiring. Daggum, that is inspiring. I want to hear it again. I'm sorry. I hope it's not. I wish this could be played at about 500 decibels right next to Blanche Lincoln's ear.
E. How did you retain control of the ship?
We're American seamen. We're union members. We stuck together and we did our jobs.
We're American seamen, we're union members, we stuck together, and we did our jobs.
And that's how we did it.
And that's how you do it. That's how the best work in America gets done, by union workers. In all walks of life, from health care and nursing to construction work to janitorial services, to teaching, to, yes, manning a merchant freighter. The best work is union work. And it's not the best work just because it pays better. Sometimes it doesn't. There are lots of workers in America whose bosses pay them a little bit extra, knowing that if they do that, maybe that little bit of extra money can keep them from organizing. I had an email earlier today from our buddy David in Tennessee, who, watching this video, said, having had union membership benefit me and mine directly, my thrill is big. Here again, the union had trained people. The trained people in a tight situation prevailed by retaining unit cohesion and doing as taught. You think maybe the non-union shipping folks take the time to train crews in anti-piracy procedures? Of course not. Just like the pilot, crew, tug captains, firemen, first responders in and around New York City Harbor simply did their jobs, these folks did their jobs. The beasts and unreasonable profit junkies that want serfdom over unions and the inherent mechanism for fairness sicken me. Then again, notes David, this video being out there will stop all mention of crew heroism on Fox News, says I. Wouldn't be surprised in the least. Every union family in America has a right to stand proud and tall over the words of John Cronin. His is a story that is a little bit extraordinary by virtue of where it took place and how it transpired, but it is emblematic of the heroism that union workers bring to their crafts each and every day, no matter the job, all over the United States of America, and, as is the case with Third Engineer John Cronin, all over the world. Let's finish up.
And from every crew member, universal praise for Captain Richard Phillips, who surrendered himself to the pirates to ensure his crew's freedom.
Very brave man.
He's brave. He's outstanding. He's extraordinary. He's very brave. He's outstanding. He's fantastic.
His actions and his professionalism on at least two separate occasions prevented me from being killed. I would be dead. Or worse, I would be a prisoner in Somalia, and I would choose death before allowing myself to do that.
But Engineer Cronin says the danger won't scare him away.
You bet I'm going back to sea.
Despite the pirate threat.
This is what I do.
Tom Costello, NBC News, Washington.
It's what I do. It's what I do. Love hearing those words. And when I heard him say that, of course I'm going back to sea. It's what I do. I was reminded of my father's favorite poem. He who spent a couple of years bobbing around in the ocean, aboard in the depths of an aircraft carrier. John Masefield. And it is National Poetry Month, as David from Maine reminded us the other night. So why not? Yeah, I know, poetry can clear a room, so I'm told. But why not? For John Cronin, it's worth it. I must go down to the seas again, to the lonely sea and the sky, and all I ask is a tall ship and a star to steer her by, and the wheels kick and the wind's song and the white sail shaking and a gray mist on the sea's face and a gray dawn breaking. I must go down to the seas again, for the call of the running tide is a wild call and a clear call that may not be denied. And all I ask is a windy day with the white clouds flying and the flung spray and the blown spume and the seagulls crying. I must go down to the seas again, to the vagrant gypsy life, to the gull's way and the whale's way, where the wind's like a whetted knife. And all I ask is a merry yarn from a laughing fellow rover, and quiet sleep, and a sweet dream, when the long trick's over. John Cronin and his mates earned all of that and more in what they did. Just a moment of gratitude for John Cronin and the Seafarers International Union, the Marine Engineers Beneficial Association, the International Organization of Master's Mates and Pilots. Those were the unions that provided anti-piracy training to their brothers and sisters. It wasn't the shipping line. It wasn't Wall Street. It wasn't a bank. Neither was it Lloyd's of London or any or AIG. It was a group of working people banded together for their common benefit and determined to provide every tool that their working brothers and sisters needed to get through the direst and most dangerous of situations. We're American seamen. We're union members. We stuck together, and we did our jobs, and that's how we did it. That reads like something straight out of Hemingway. We did our jobs, and that's how we did it. I don't think I can fully express how thrilling, how much pride. I mean, I'll be honest, that story's the kind of story that generates honest to God patriotic pride in me. The president of the Maritime Trades Department at the AFL-CIO is Michael Sacco. He said, and I quote, "We are extremely proud of the efforts shown by the crew of the Maersk Alabama. These well-trained American merchant mariners exemplify the very best in our industry." True, I'm sure, Mr. Sacco, true, I am sure. But they also exemplify the very best in our country. The very best in being American. The very best in being American workers. And my argument for Blanche Lincoln and David Pryor, for Ben Nelson and Bill Nelson, for Mary Landrieu and Evan Bayh, my argument for all of them and the other mugwump Democrats who would keep American working men and women from having the same experience, from having the same training, from having the same camaraderie and brotherhood and sisterhood as John Cronin and his shipmates on the Maersk Alabama, my message to them is to wake up and listen up. Because you are paying attention, I am paying attention, thousands, millions of Americans are paying attention to see whose side these so-called Democratic senators are on. I focus, of course, on the Senate because getting the Employee Free Choice Act out of the House of Representatives is a no-brainer. That's a done deal. It is only a tiny handful in a relatively small body of so-called deliberative lawmakers. It is only that small number who have the power to keep the same kind of experience that inspired John Cronin away from millions of working people in this country. And it is unacceptable to me. And I would assume it is unacceptable to you that they should be permitted to do so. The Wednesday after the inauguration, Harry Reid looked at a room full of us and said, "We will have a card check agreement. We will have a card check bill by summer." Summer is not that far away. We know that Arlen Specter, who supported the Employee Free Choice Act the last time it went through the Senate, will not do it this time through. Working people, his constituents in Pennsylvania, are not now worth it to him for him to support their best interests. We know that Arlen Specter supported the Employee Free Choice Act the last time through as a matter of political convenience. He faces re-election in 2010, and he is more afraid. Dig this. Just let this settle into your bones. Arlen Specter is more afraid of the weird fringe right-wing element in Pennsylvania than he is of working people who want nothing more than an even playing field, a level playing field in their workplaces. Imagine that. Arlen Specter is more afraid of people who come out to vote motivated by microscopic cell structures that cannot be seen with the naked eye, but to which they refer to as fully functioning human beings. You know, the rat to laugh crowd. He's more afraid of them and the ability that his opponent in the primary, a man named Pat Toomey, he's more afraid of them than he cares about working people. It's just a sad reality. Blanche Lincoln in Arkansas cares more about what she describes as her corporate constituent, Walmart. She cares more about what Walmart thinks than she does what working people think. She cares more about the quarterly profit and loss statement of Walmart Incorporated than she does about the monthly wages of working people all over her state. I have no doubt on this issue, maybe I'll be proven wrong, but I have no doubt on this issue that for once both of my senators would get it right. Robert Byrd is not going to let this opportunity pass him by voting in favor of the corporations. And neither, I think, will Jay Rockefeller. But that is far from enough. We absolutely must turn the Blanche Lincolns and the Ben Nelsons and the David Pryors. We absolutely must turn them, the Evan Byes. Mark Udall has gotten all squishy about employee free choice in Colorado. The man, whose name I cannot recall offhand, who replaced Ken Salazar as a Democratic senator from Colorado, has also proven himself less than forthcoming in supporting working families in these United States. That equivocation is unacceptable. Absolutely unacceptable. And they need to know it. Over the last few days, we could very easily have been talking about a tragedy off the coast of the Horn of Africa. We could have been seeing video scenes of women in widow's weeds weeping for their lost loved ones. But we did not. We have not. We have seen instead tableaus of unmitigated joy at the return of those merchant seamen to their home soil. The triumphant return. We have heard heroic tales of the captain of that vessel. And we know now, thanks to the words of John Cronin, why we have had one scene as opposed to the other. Our buddy Reverbo, our critic at large, says, I have just one word to describe that entire situation with those pirates. One word that comes to mind when I consider every part of that, from the actions of the crew, their captain, yes, our president, and the Navy SEALs who ended it. One word with an exclamation point at the end will do it for me. Sweet. It is sweet. After 8 years of the bitter taste of ashes in our mouth from our failures in Iraq and Afghanistan, from the misadventures of the whole Bush administration, after tasting the bitter juice of torture and domestic spying, as we did yesterday, after all of that, what we have learned today is, in fact, sweet almost beyond comprehension. Speaking of the torture memos, not everybody, well, to one degree or another, no one is pleased out of the release of these memos. You and I, and other American citizens who have a fully functioning and well-developed moral sense, are disgusted by the idea that torture will be gotten away with, that it will be blinked at, that it will be treated with a nod and a wink, and that no one will stand in the dock for crimes against humanity. Others, however, are unhappy for a different reason. The right-wingers, are complaining, as usual. An unnamed official quoted in the story over at Politico by Mike Allen, and trust me when I say that Mike Allen is giving this guy cover because of who Mike Allen is. Mike Allen writes, a former top official in the administration of President George W. Bush called the publication of the memos unbelievable. Here's the quote. It's damaging because these are techniques that work. And by Obama's action today, we are telling the terrorists what they are. We've laid it all out for our enemies. This is totally unnecessary. Publicizing the techniques does grave damage to our national security by ensuring they can never be used again. Even in a ticking time bomb scenario where thousands or even millions of Americans' lives are at stake. I'm sorry, you know, that's one of the curses that lays upon me. When I read words, I hear words. Are you like that? Words don't just appear on a printed page that don't have some voice behind them in your... Oh, wait a minute. Maybe it's time for me to call horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner. Maybe I'm not supposed to be hearing voices in my head when I read words on it, but oh, dear. But I do. And I always have, from the time I learned to read. Every word across a printed page is accompanied by a voice saying it. When I write, I hear the punctuation. I just do. And to hear the breathless, pearl-clutching terror of an anonymous, loyal Bushy is sickening to me. and that ticking time bomb scenario. There's the loyal Bushies are still, they still think they're living in the middle of a Fox dramatic series. The loyal Bushies still think they're living in 24, where if you just drown the brown guy a little bit more, he's suddenly going to tell you where to send Jack Bauer to cut the yellow wire to keep the bomb from going off. The problem being that that's all fiction. It doesn't happen. There is no such thing as a ticking time bomb scenario. It is a creation of the paranoid fantasies that take place inside the minds, or what passes for them, of right-wingers who love torture. These are techniques that work. And again, this kind of goes back to what we were talking about with the for-profit media in the last night or so. Those words from Robert Perry, that we, on which we largely ended the program last night, where he said a Republican or a conservative can say anything they want to, no matter how nuts, I'm paraphrasing now, obviously, no matter how nuts it is, and have the for-profit media in the United States pick it up and run with it like it is gospel truth. There's another example of it. We've laid it out. We've laid it all out for our enemies. This is totally unnecessary. Well, look. Do you really think that off in a cave in the wild, wild frontiers of Pakistan's provinces, that they're now looking at each other and saying, if you get caught, they're probably going to put some... Jesus, if you get caught, they're probably going to put some bugs in the box with you. Don't worry, they've already said in the memo, it's only a caterpillar. How does that change one's response to torture? We have not been given one example, not one, of torture leading to good information. On the other hand, however, we have a number of examples. We've gone over them on this program, of the Bush administration's torture policies producing the exact opposite result from what was intended. The right-wing freak continued. I don't know if he was standing behind a pillar in a parking garage with a trench coat on and a fedora on his head and dark glasses, or you can call me Deep Throat. I don't know. But he continued, I don't believe Obama would intentionally endanger the nation, so it must be he thinks either, one, the previous administration, including the CIA professionals who have defended this program, is lying about its importance and effectiveness, or two, he believes we are no longer really at war and no longer face the kind of grave threat to our national security this program has protected against. Really? Torture's protecting us now? You see how they escalate it? From one crazy thing to crazy squared. Now it's not just an effective means of getting information, that assertion being a bold-faced lie. Now it's actually protecting the country. The more we waterboard, the safer we are. Where does this kind of sick thinking come from? These are techniques that work. Evidence? Empirical evidence? Any? Where? Any? Please? No. Not quite. So there's torture. Now, some are saying that the carefully worded statement coming out of the Obama administration does not necessarily mean that no one will be prosecuted. That it was worded in such a way as to leave the door open for the prosecution of the people who came up with this insanely evil business. One of those people making that assertion is Jamil Jafar, lead counsel for the ACLU. Glenn Greenwald published his statement at Salon. Jamil Jafar, not sure which, my bad, told Glenn Greenwald, "I think it's a mistake to read the grant of immunity too broadly. I don't think that President Obama's statement should be taken as a sign that there's no chance that the architects of the torture program will be prosecuted. And even with respect to the interrogators, the interrogators, it's only the interrogators who relied in good faith on legal advice who are protected." So we can hope. We can hope. But I am of that school of thought that does not buy into the idea that we must always look forward and never look back, and that prosecuting criminals constitutes looking back. If you want to get into that kind of a semantic fight, I'll argue that prosecuting war criminals and criminals, people who have committed crimes against humanity, people like John Yoo and David Addington and Jason Bybee, Federal Judge Jason Bybee, whom the United States Senate just sailed right through. Remember, no filibusters? But I would argue that the failure to prosecute criminals such as they, that failure is actually the failure to look forward. As Maura noted in her email last night on the program, it was Gerald Ford's failure to look forward and try to even imagine what giving Richard Nixon a pass would do to this country that gave us Iran-Contra, that gave us George W. Bush, that gave us domestic spying, that gave us the suspension of habeas corpus, that gave us torture. In this particular instance, the memos described something called walling, W-A-L-L-I-N-G, walling. That's a situation in which a person who is restrained, who cannot defend him or herself, is repeatedly slammed into a concrete wall. But it's just walling. It's not beating. It's not abusing. It's not crushing, battering, or assaulting. It's walling. There were descriptions in the memos of something called an attention grasp. You know, a grasp, as in grasp the handle firmly and pull the starter cord to begin to start the lawnmower engine. Grasp, an attention grasp. Simple English words, however, put in the minds of sadists and torturers, however, aren't nearly so simple anymore. For the attention grasp, as it turns out, involves putting a defenseless person, and we are talking about defenseless people, regardless of what they were believed or not believed to have engaged in or not engaged in, whether they were Afghan goat herders or the worst of the terrorists. By the time this was being done to them, they were defenseless human beings. The attention grasp involves taking the defenseless human being and subjecting them to a choke hold, and not the phony cute ones like they use on the wrestling every Saturday night, but a real one that cuts off air to the brain. And once the defenseless human being was caught up in that choke hold, to repeatedly slap the defenseless human being. That is an attention grasp. In reading over these memos, and I almost hesitate to make the comparison, because they say that it kills the potential for further dialogue. But I don't know how you dialogue about justifications for torture. Torture is one of those things that you either do it or you don't do it. And if you don't do it, you don't do it. But if you do, game on. Like I said, I hesitate to make the comparison. But read the memos. I'm sure many of you already have. And look, take note of, absorb, process the clinical sterility with which these things, these acts of torture, are described. Read the attention about the attention grasp. Read about stress positions. Read about walling. Read about waterboarding. Read about all of that and see if you can recall another time in history when another nation, via its record keepers and opinion generators, see if you can recall another time in history when, with great attention to detail, monstrous acts of inhumanity were laid out point by point, and justified based on some vaguely defined threat to national security. Do you know what I'm talking about? I have a feeling you do. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Yeah, I know, two nights in a row.
That's all right, Sandra. What's up?
Oh, no. You know, I'm just sort of, I mean, I'll give him credit for releasing it because, you know, that's just really not done. I'm sure he's alienated hella people. And to be fair, it is on the Justice Department to act, you know, irregardless of Obama. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, I do.
Holden needs to make the decision. The pressure needs to be put on the Justice Department to act like that. Obama, as far as I'm concerned, him releasing that, That's Kennedy type shit. I'm sure that's, you know what happened to Kennedy after he started dealing with the CIA.
Yeah.
I mean, I just think that it was interesting that he released it, because I'm sure he was pressurized not to.
Oh, it's obvious. It was obvious from the quotes in the from the right wing that pressure, as much pressure was brought to bear as could be brought.
And I think that, you know, he did go ahead and release it, which, you know, I think is kind of unusual that happened, because if he's sort of swimming with the sharks, so to speak, Obama. And I'm just more sort of disturbed that we have a sitting judge, that Bybee.
Yeah.
He's sick.
Yeah, I mean,
okay.
He should. Now that this is out, if there is a shred of dignity, if there is a shred of integrity within the Senate of the United States, impeachment proceedings should be initiated against him.
No, and this guy is hearing all sorts of other civil liberty type cases. No, he needs, first straight up, that guy needs to go. That's far worse than even you. Who needs, I don't know what, he needs to be arrested too, but this man is a sitting judge, and he's talking, you know, like room 101. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, what right does Jason Bybee have ever to pass judgment on another human being for the rest of his natural born days? None?
I'm sure he has his own insect that, you know what I'm saying? I mean, come on now. This is so sick, but... back to the whole prosecution thing. I mean, if Obama is going to go so far as to release this, and he thinks he can just say, what was it? It's time for, I forget the, time for reflection and not retribution. He cannot do those two actions at the same time. It ain't going to work. He shouldn't have released them. You see what I'm saying?
I do, and frankly, I disagree with the notion of prosecution equating with retribution.
Well, no, I mean, it's just a bunch of BS. I mean, next time I'm hassled by the cops or something, I'll try that line or something.
Yeah, we need to look forward and not back.
Right, and see how that works out. And it isn't any retribution. I'm sick of that mentality, because it's not applied to us as citizens, you know?
Yeah, well, it's that two-tiered justice system that you mentioned last night.
And it's you know, I don't care what sort of lofty language you want to couch it in, it's still disgusting. And it's even more so with political leaders. They need to be held account at a, you know, more stringently, as far as I'm concerned. This is, he always seems to just take a couple of steps and then, I don't even want to say pull back, because completely collapses, because this is not, it don't even add up, you know? If you're going to do this, go against the establishment and the intelligent establishment at that, he better have a plan, not just, oh, we won't prosecute you.
Yeah, what's that old saying, come hard or don't come at all?
Yeah, no, because that's weak. It's like, well, I'm going to put this horrible information out, our dirty little secrets out, so the American people can see what our government does. And then what? We're supposed to say, and continue on with the shopping procession? I mean, I don't compute.
I don't get it any more than you do.
Well, I just think, just as I'm not too sure what the end game is here, because I thought it was a fairly gutsy move, but then...
Well, what, you know, the argument that's being made, that was made to Glenn Greenwald, if I understand it correctly, is that this is all about the weasel words. That business of in good faith, that anybody who is deemed to have not been acting in good faith and acting on the advice of the Office of Legal Counsel, that this sort of verbal pardon doesn't extend to them.
Well, no, that's Nuremberg. I mean, didn't they decide there that an order is not an order?
Right. Well, yeah, and I think Keith Olbermann pointed that out last night. That good faith argument is it's a sort of more weaselly. Of course, he didn't say weasel. I am a more weaselly way of saying as long as you plead, I was only following orders.
Right, but the thing is that, you know, and now the commentaries with, oh, you know, how it's not good for Obama to be alienating, you know, this agency or that. I mean, that smacks of fairly threatening. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
That's a bit disturbing to me.
Yeah, I think you're pointing toward a valid question, Sandra, as to who the hell we are. You know, in the days of ancient Rome, if you alienated, to use the word, if you alienated the Praetorian cohort, your longevity as emperor was not very secure.
Yeah, and, you know, Afghanistan won't be, you know, his Spain, you know, how Claudius got Spain and sent on ambassadors out there. He knew what he was doing, right?
Yeah.
But Obama ain't got nobody, ain't no got no place for these people to go.
But this idea that he could alienate the CIA or what does this mean? Somebody at the CIA is going to pick up the phone and call somebody at the Secret Service and say, why don't you guys go have a donut for a couple of minutes?
You know, yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. And to hear the commentators, you know, allude to it being problematic, you know, in the guise of, oh, he may need help in some of his foreign adventures, it's just circle talk because what are you talking about? I mean, he's the commander-in-chief. This national security state needs some sunshine anyway, you know, severely.
Oh, you know, one of the news out of Spain is not encouraging. But, you know, one of the investigations that is ongoing, Sandra, is of the CIA and CIA agents and officers who were complicit in the kidnapping of an innocent man, a greengrocer from Germany.
Is this the Italian?
It works its way through there.
Yeah, no, that's interesting too. I mean,
well, what I find particularly interesting in it was the statement that Eric Holder made yesterday.
Yeah.
In which he said that not only would he not pursue prosecutions, but that the Justice Department would provide representation, and this is a quote, in any state or federal judicial or administrative proceeding brought against any CIA employee. Now, what does that mean? He didn't say or international.
Well, no, I mean, at the same time, though, you know, they're pressuring, I forget the leader of Spain. You know, that was a purely political gesture because from what I heard from that Scott Horton, the prosecutors don't have nowhere near the power in Spain like they do here.
No.
So for him, you know, that statement is a bit like, yeah, okay, whatever, because the judge can do what the hell he wants. Anyway, so, I mean, that news isn't good, but it may not be the final word. But it doesn't really matter. It's embarrassing that we can't use our own justice system to take care of this. You know what I mean?
Right, and what this whole affair is pointing to, Sandra, is the fact that our justice system is crippled, that it is ethically and morally sucking air right now.
No, it's bad, and it's really disturbing when the media is being harnessed by said interest to remind Obama what he should not do. That gives me the creeps. I'm just like, what? You know what I mean? Anytime there's some sunshine on a situation, that's always for the best. So when I hear them trying to tell him not to, because of what? You know, what, the never-ending terror war? It's old. It's stale. You know, they need to. The media is really getting to me. They're not our friend.
No, that's that whole Robert Perry stuff again from last night. Republicans can say any just sprayed roach crazy thing they want to say, and the for-profit media will look at them, Sandra, and say, "Well, yes, that seems very interesting that you would say something like that." Let me hurry out and report that as normal.
Right. Well, just the fact that they check out that Drudge site tells me all I need to know. You know what I mean? Like, that's their jumping off point. You know, you've got to shake your head, and I would just continue reading the international media. You know what I mean? Because this is a joke right about now here. But
sadly,
anyway,
it is.
I just wanted to sort of, you know, with the because I was talking to this this professor of mine who teaches comparative politics, and you know those types are pretty conservative overall. But she was just appalled, and you know gave all kinds of international legal reasons for why this is just so bad, this business with the torturing and our lack.
Well, sooner or later, it's going to be done to one of ours by someone else. And what I want to know then, Sandra, is what, you know, I want to know what the tenor of the hue and cry will be. The right wing will be screaming, you know, bomb them into the Stone Age. But at some point in time, will we have the integrity as a nation to look up and say, we are, you know, we just plucked the fruit from the tree that George Bush planted?
Well, I mean, it's just to hear the whole sort of, we need to reflect. I'm still stuck on that because I'm like, what are you talking about? Reflect over what? I mean, the actions are so despicable. There is no middle ground. You either torture or you don't, right?
That's, yes.
I mean, it's not like a little bit torturing or whatever, you know?
Well, I don't think there's any such thing as a little torture.
You know, and it's just sort of, you know, these despicable memos, you know, when you look, it's just, I don't know, they just gave me the creep.
Well, and, you know, that's what I was alluding to was Hannah Arendt and the banality and her the banality of evil.
Straight up. No, she definitely, you know, it's like the whole... Right, right, the little Eichmanns and, you know, the people who aren't complicit. Yet.
I mean, if you just sort of get in a, forgive me, Sandra, but if you get in a sort of poetic mode and you just sort of imagine yourself into the situation and you just be an imaginary fly on the wall in David Addington or Jason Bybee's or John Yoo's office. And just for a second or two, look over there at him, sitting there with a dictaphone in his hand. And I don't know if you've ever watched anybody work with a dictaphone, but you don't just sit there and scream. Usually people who use them, you know, just kind of mumble into them.
Mm-hmm.
And just mumble and say, you have asked us about attention grasps. Attention grasps are fine because they are not torture, because... when you cut off the air supply to a person's mind, that person is not permanently harmed as long as it is not done for months or weeks or years, and it is therefore not torture, period, paragraph.
Sick.
And then the next thing that happens is the phone rings and somebody says, hey, you want to go out? Where do you want to go for lunch?
I know, but common sense would say if you need to have the medical establishment in a room with someone you're dealing with, there's already a problem from the jump, right?
Yeah, but and there's a problem for that member of the medical establishment.
That is even more. Well, I know all of it's despicable, medical, legal, the whole enterprise is just rancid.
And that's what I find despicable, to use your word, about the way that this sort of blanket pardon was expressed.
Yeah, no, nothing even investigated.
Yeah, not going to investigate, not going to prosecute, and everybody gets a pass as long as they say, I did it in good faith.
No, and how do you...
How does a doctor watch torture, or a nurse, watch torture and perform the functions of their task as healthcare providers... in good faith? I mean, what I'm getting at, Sandra, is that the two cannot be reconciled.
Oh, no, exactly. I mean, it's, you know, and when you think about the end result of torture, when you really don't, the information, I mean, from what we all have been told, it's fairly useless.
Yes.
So it makes you wonder, well, then, this is just an exercise in sadism, right?
Yes. Yes, it
or
is.
Or just the fact that, you know, yeah, I don't see, and it's degenerate.
These are the products of sick, twisted, broken, faulty, damaged minds.
Well, no, and you have the law, you know, to provide a protection to just this sort of episode, you know? If people feel that there's no accountability, I know this is simple, Well, it's just going to continue. And you're going to have the next president, it's just, I don't know. I just am like, I don't know why I thought Obama would, be different. But on some levels, I guess he is because, Bush or McCain would have never released these memos. I have to give him credit for that.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's almost on the front end, Sandra, and I've been struggling with this myself. On the front end, what was done resembles the kind of thing you would do under a Truth and Reconciliation Commission.
Yeah, but, right.
But it's not a Truth and Reconciliation Commission unless it's a Truth and Reconciliation Commission.
Exactly, and not just the goodwill of a recently elected leader. You see what I'm saying? That's all good and well, but this is my problem. I'm not interested in relying on the goodness, because there is no such thing in politicians. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
There's law, though, that we all as a society can agree upon, and that is something that we, I usually can go with, a law, much more so than, oh, well, he's a good man. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Or she's a good woman, or whatever the hell we're living under now, because that's pretty scary,
It's really scary because when that level of arbitrary application of law enters a society, then no one is safe. Then everybody waits on the knock at the door at 3 o'clock in the morning.
No, and also it really does put a strain on my interaction with what authorities I have to deal with, be it the IRS, the pig that might be pulling me over because of my dreads. You know what I'm saying? It heightens everything because I'm like, F you. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't apply, And so it's more of that adapt or die overall mentality speaks in,
Yeah, and the whole resistance is futile. Sure.
All of it is just, it just doesn't. That was the one good thing about this country, is the recourse that was sort of there. And, it was not there for certain groups, of course, and it still isn't there for some groups, but the whole idea that it is accessible and it has evolved is the best thing about the U.S. But
I can't help but draw a parallel, Sandra, and I don't want to keep you too long, but I can't help but draw a parallel between this torture business, okay? And we know what it was. And there's a trial going on in Colorado right now. A sick person had a sexual liaison with a transgendered person and knew for 3 days that the person he was having sex with was a transgendered person. And on day three, beat the transgendered person to death with a fire extinguisher. Blows to the head. Now, that is, for what was, and the person was killed for their gender identity. Now, how do you, now one's a state crime and another's, and these are arguably federal crimes that we're talking about. But still, you gotta square them up. Because we have tortured people to death, Sandra. These are only some of the memos from the Office of Legal Counsel. People have died. Murder. Now, how do you square up the punishment, the trial and punishment of one heinous act, which is just, which must happen if there's to be anything resembling justice, and then look at the other murderer and say, you get to walk because you say I was only doing my job?
Yeah, no, it's true. And also, less benign, and what you're describing is the Stevens thing. It's like, okay, you saw that the prosecutors were misbehaving and you pulled the conviction as it should be done, but they were so quick to do that,
Yeah, and well, the fact of the matter is, where the Stevens thing is concerned, Sandra, I'm convinced that was a thrown fight. That prosecution was the Bush. It was the Bush Justice Department, and that prosecution was supposed to be botched from the get-go in order to provide grounds for appeal. But they botched it so well that the lawyers who did it may wind up being non-lawyers if they're not careful. Because they were openly dishonest with the court. But that was a set piece. That was a pageant. That was supposed to end. It was supposed to end that with Stevens walking. Because you know, that's what you do. Republicans take care of Republicans. And then when Holder got hold of it and said, "Holy crap," there was no way he could have any integrity if he didn't move to null pros the case.
Right, but that same argument can be applied to this situation, though. That's what I'm saying. It's like, you know, you're not fooling me by saying upholding integrity and rule of law with this botched prosecution, and then turn around and you know, hide behind Obama with this torture crap, you know?
Well, I'm very curious to see how this plays. You know, maybe this was done as an end game. Maybe this was the end. Maybe they said, okay, well, everybody gets a pass and the CIA breathes a sigh of relief and, you know, goes back to building a better thumbscrew. I don't know. But it will be interesting to see it go forward. You know, this business that went down, the ugly question that was not ugly, but I mean, the question that was asked today in Mexico about the assault weapons ban.
Oh, please. You know what? Wow. How did that end? What's the latest on that?
Well, that was just Obama said, look, this is a problem. And we're going to work on enforcing the laws we have now.
Which means that the ban won't be coming back, right?
Right. Because, among other things, Dianne Feinstein, you know, one of your senators, has come out and said, we'd be crazy to bring that up right now.
No. Yeah, I heard her say that, and I just thought, oh, my God, you know. And this is right in the middle of the, you know, the endless people shooting up everybody lately, right?
Yeah.
When is a good time to do that?
When's a good day? But, well, for me...
Why isn't now a good time? What is she talking about?
Well, she's talking about the fact that guns are already flying off the shelf and people are buying them almost faster than they can be made, and she doesn't want somebody coming after her. Because the right wing is at a fever pitch and a hair trigger as it is. You gotta, I've talked about how dangerous the right wing is or are, but I don't think we fully, you and me, ordinary folks, I don't think we get a full grasp of just exactly how scared Democrats are, because they know people are out there buying guns for them.
Well, listen, I always appreciate the French, because the government in France is pretty much scared of the people. And I don't have no problems with our government being a little bit scared of the people, but not in this way. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
That's a bit weird. And it's scary that these guns are flying off the shelf. I mean, I hear this. People can't even find ammo. It's you know, selling that fast.
It really, really is.
And is that true, or is that just media?
No. There are shortages.
I mean, they have 24-hour factories, I heard now. You know, it's the demand is such that they're running, you know, factories 24 hours to keep making all this stuff.
Yeah.
And is this because, what, the economy's going south and... there's a nignog in the White House. I mean, is it just a perfect storm?
I think, frankly, this would be happening if Hillary Clinton had been elected president.
So it's just the same canard that demos want to take.
Gonna get your guns.
And we just forget that Bush did take people's guns in New Orleans, right?
Right. No, can't, that's down the memory hole. How dare you bring that up?
Right. Okay, I just, you know, because facts keep getting in the way of this story you're telling.
I know.
Obama, he ain't doing nothing. The Second Amendment is always going on about that.
We got some Second Amendment love today.
Yeah, and you got the handguns, you know, more and more in D.C. You know, so he never struck me as, I'm not saying he's a friend of the NRA, but he certainly isn't. I don't need to go buy out, you know, one handgun gun a month, which is the law in California, you know, to catch up.
Catch up. Oh my God.
Yeah, I gotta catch up.
Yeah, you're down at least 15 handguns, Sandra.
Well,
I mean, as compared with a lot of other people.
Right. When I got 6-year-olds living here. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I get it.
But you're right. You know, one of the lines from President Obama today in Mexico, I continue to believe that we can respect and honor the Second Amendment rights of our Constitution, the rights of sportsmen and hunters, homeowners who want to keep their families safe, to lawfully bear arms, while dealing with assault weapons that, as we now know, here in Mexico, are helping to fuel extraordinary violence in our own country as well. Now, having said that, I think none of us are under any illusion that reinstating that ban would be easy. And so what we've focused on is how we can improve our enforcement of existing laws, because even under current law, trafficking illegal firearms, sending them across a border, is illegal. That's something we can stop. So, you know, it's all, you know, take a deep breath, Wingnuts. Nobody's coming for your guns.
Oh, God. Well, you know.
And if next time it's some lunatic right winger and he blows away 15 cops, that's okay. Or if it's some lunatic right winger and he shoots up a whole church full of liberals, that's okay. Because we're going to honor and reverence the Second Amendment.
Yeah, I don't know. All of it just doesn't seem to be very prudent and very smart. But anyway, I got to go.
All right. Take care, Sandra. Have a wonderful weekend.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye now. That's Sandra calling from California. Yeah, just because these are those words. This is from the press conference in Mexico.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, Mr. President, as well. President Obama, as a candidate for
Señor, Presidente Obama.
You said that you wanted to see the assault ban weapon, the ban on assault weapons reinstated. Your Attorney General has spoken in favor of this. Mexican officials have also spoken in favor of it. But we haven't heard you say that since you took office. Do you plan to keep your promise? And if not, how do you explain that to the American people?
Oh,
and President Calderon, sorry if I may, would you like to see this ban reinstated? And have you raised that today with President Obama? Thank you.
Well, first of all, we did discuss this extensively in our meetings. I have not backed off at all from my belief that the assault weapons ban made sense. And I continue to believe that.
Now, that's one of those Freudian moments. And I don't mean to overanalyze, and I hope I don't piss anybody off. But listen to the Freudian slip.
Belief that the assault weapons ban.
Can't say gun ban. He can't say gun ban. Not because he is physically unable to say it, but because the President of the United States knows he dare not phrase it in those terms, lest the right-wingers run out and buy more guns. The United States of America, any way you slice it, and well before Barack Obama was elected president or even born, is an armed camp. And it's an armed camp where the arms are frequently in the hands of, people like the insane massacre artist at Virginia Tech, or the evil, wicked, right-wing, white supremacist goon in Pittsburgh, or the burned-out old right-wing redneck in Tennessee. And for those people, with those people walking around heavily armed, you cannot say gun ban, because the next thing you know, it'll show up on Alex Jones's site or some other right-wing freak screaming, "Obama says gun ban! Freedom at risk!" You know, but anyway, just an observation.
Made sense, and I continue to believe that we can respect and honor the Second Amendment rights in our Constitution, the rights of sportsmen and hunters and homeowners who want to keep their families safe to lawfully bear arms, while dealing with assault weapons that, as we now know here in Mexico, are helping to fuel extraordinary violence. Violence in our own country as well. Now, having said that, I think none of us are under any illusion that reinstating that ban would be easy. And so what we focused on is how we can improve our enforcement of existing laws. Because even under current law, trafficking illegal firearms, sending them across a border, is illegal. That's something that we can stop. And so our focus is to work with Secretary Napolitano, Attorney General Holder, our entire Homeland Security team, ATF, Border Security, everybody who's involved in this, to coordinate with our counterparts in Mexico to significantly ramp up our enforcement of existing laws. And in fact, I've asked Eric Holder to do a complete review of how our enforcement operations are currently working, and make sure that we're cutting down on the loopholes that are resulting in some of these drug trafficking problems. Last point I would make is that there are going to be some opportunities where I think we can build some strong consensus. I'll give you one example, and that is the issue of gun tracing, or the tracing of bullets and ballistics.
See, he had to do it again. Gun tracing? Oh, they're going to want me to register my guns! They're taking away my freedom. On the simple issue of trying to be able to connect guns to gun crimes. Sweet heavenly days. The President of the United States had to back off two phrases in one answer to a question because the way he was inclined to answer them would have sent an already fever-pitched, ignorant right-wing gang of thugs into an even bigger conniption. That is as clear an indication of the tinder, dry, ready to flame at a moment's notice, flash paper culture in which we live.
Gun information that have been used in major crimes, that's information that we are still not giving to law enforcement as a consequence of provisions that have been blocked in the United States Congress. And those are the areas where I think that we can make some significant progress early. That doesn't mean that we're steering away from the issue of the assault guns ban, but it does mean that we want to act with urgency promptly now, and I think we can make significant progress.
Wow. I think President Barack Obama has a pretty good idea of the state this nation is in. And I think he's been briefed by the Secret Service. I think he knows probably better than you or I about those flashpoint right-wingers and where they stand right now. And I don't think he's comfortable. I don't think he's comfortable at all. 20 minutes past the hour, almost halfway through this Front Porch Friday edition of Head On. Head on, you know, as in using our brains, unlike the other side. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, Head On, H-E-A-D-O-N. Chime in. Otherwise, it'll be two more nights before you get another chance to speak your mind. All Foxed Up with John Fox comes your way Sunday nights at 9 p.m. here on the Horn. What of it? What do you think? Is America as dry as tinder? Is America one spark away from conflagration? Not you, not me, not liberals. But heavily armed, crazed right-wingers. How close are we? This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. We'll be right back.
I don't like Mondays. Tell me why I don't like Mondays. 的一道蝴蝶，蝴蝶，蝴蝶一道。
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. On the Employee Free Choice Act labor law reform, Pennsylvania Senator Arlen Specter is either ignorant or lying when he says,
I could not support it when it eliminated the secret ballot. If they get 50% plus one, the union is recognized, and there is not the current procedure of having a secret ballot election.
Specter is dead wrong. The National Labor Relations Act says when 30% of workers file with the board, an election shall be called when the workers decide to file. If the Employee Free Choice Act passes, workers could still do that. What changes is that workers could choose instead to get 50% plus one to sign union cards, and then the employer would be required by the law to respect the workers' choice to form a union. Senator Arlen Specter is either ignorant or lying when he says this about the Employee Free Choice Act.
The Choice Act has an entirely new procedure where you collect cards.
Specter is dead wrong again. Union cards aren't newly created by this reform. They're used under current law, but only if the employer chooses to allow them. The Employee Free Choice Act lets workers choose to use union cards to organize unions. It may be possible that Specter isn't lying or ignorant here. Maybe he's just singing the tune paid for by the more than $230,000 in campaign cash he took from the union-busting law firm Blank Rome, LLP. 100 workers for a Hewlett-Packard subsidiary in France have released 5 managers after they were notified that FM Logistics would soon be introducing a proposal to save jobs. The company had originally announced plans to lay off 483 workers in June, triggering the worker reaction to take their managers hostage for 10 hours. It's an ongoing tactic by French workers. Suicide rates for debt-ridden Indian farmers are skyrocketing. Jesse Russell reports.
More than 1,500 farmers in India have committed suicide over the past year as they face a massive and ongoing drought, which is driving them into debt. According to Down to Earth magazine, the water level in the Indian region of Chhattisgarh has dropped by more than 200 feet over only a handful of years. Without water, the farmers have no crops to pay off lenders. According to the Organic Farming Association of India, nearly 10,000 farmers across the country who were facing increasing debts committed suicide in the last decade. The government has stepped in to try and help the debt-ridden farmers, offering to waive farmer loans. Here is today's economic report. The month of March saw New York State's unemployment rate hold steady at 7.8%, even though 33,000 private sector positions were lost. Overall, the state has seen a decline of 176,100 jobs in the private sector since August of 2008. New York City's unemployment rate was also steady in March, staying at 8.1%. In March of 2008, the city's unemployment rate was 4.6%.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
exactly halfway through the program for this Friday evening. And let's go to the phones. Light them up, you guys. You know how to do it. 877-443-2366. 304-658-3333. Any way you care to get through. Aw, dadgummit. Well, you'll have that sometimes. Can't be helped. So, just to sort of put a little bit of perspective into the idea of torture and how some people respond to it. I'm thinking maybe this might prove instructive. As I've said, there are people who are deliberately whipping this nation into a frenzy. And there are people who are severely stunted in their ability to comprehend human life or let alone human suffering. There are people who do not understand that once someone is in custody, they have a right not to be physically tortured. One of those people is, of course, Flush Flumball.
This is Madeline up next in Melbourne, Florida. Madeline, nice to have you on the EIB Network. Hello.
Hello, Rush. Once again, it's an honor to speak with you.
Thank you.
I'm so fired up today between Napolitano and this latest of the memos or whatever. What did Snurdly say?
The CIA interrogation.
Oh, please.
Obama, he thought about this so long. He struggled with whether or not to release the details here. And then the left, do you know the left, Madeline, has all been out of shape because Obama said, no, we got to move on. We're not going to prosecute any of the CIA people who did the interrogations. But he did not rule out prosecuting former Bush administration officials.
Yeah, I heard that. Is this the purpose of this, to distract people from all the idiot things he's doing? I mean, aren't people more concerned about the economy?
You know, if we didn't actually have this to run, I would. This is evidentiary. If we didn't actually have this to run, I myself would be hard pressed to believe that there are people in America, in the United States, who think that the torture memos were released as a diversion from the bad economic times. Because in my own brain, I can't imagine ever making an argument like that. But you hear it. Those people are real. Those people exist.
I want you to stop and think of this again. Try to come up with your own answer. Here you have memos. And by the way, if you look at what we are calling torture, you have to laugh.
You have to laugh. If you look at what we call torture, you have to laugh. I have an email here, and I'm not going to disclose its author. I was thrown against a wall once, the email says. Well, the subject line is, I can't listen tonight. I can't listen tonight. I was thrown against a wall once by a loved one. And this torture stuff is going to give me nightmares. How can they even think none of this has a long-lasting effect? If Obama doesn't want to prosecute, then he should let the other countries do it. Or a special prosecutor. That's as plain as it can be put. Hear this again.
Here you have memos. And by the way, if you look at what we are calling torture, you have to laugh. For example,
for example. The next thing is going to be making light of putting a bug in a box. Never mind that there's already a human being in the box being subjected to sensory deprivation, extremes of cold or heat, absence of food or water. You know, if it, when you get to be a certain age, you get kind of creaky in your joints. And I have congenitally bad knees. If I sleep in one position all night long, I wake up in pain. I can't imagine what it would mean to be stuffed in a box, never mind the bugs, for hours on end, unable to move. That chills me to my marrow, because the pain is very real. And of course, it goes almost without saying that whether there's pain or not does not change the information that is in one's head. It might, however, encourage one to lie, I guess. But this again is the morally stunted psychopath who argued that enforced sexual acts constitute, in his words, nothing more than a fraternity prank. If you look at what we are calling torture, you have to laugh. Maybe if you've lied for so long that you can't tell what the truth is anymore. Maybe if you are paid so highly to tell those lies that you don't even give them a second thought. Maybe under those circumstances, the process whereby a defenseless human being is grabbed by the throat, the air supply to their brain is cut off, and they are repeatedly slapped. Maybe that's a joke. Maybe skull crushing is a joke. But there is nothing in me that makes me able to laugh. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. This is Alan.
Hey, Alan. How are you?
Pretty good. I'm in Wisconsin now.
That was quick.
Yeah, now I'm going back to Pennsylvania.
Mercy.
I picked up yesterday a Harley Davidson plant. That was pretty fascinating.
Oh, I'll bet it was.
Rush Limbaugh, he makes like $28 million a year.
40.
Oh, wow. That is unbelievable. And he wants to complain about taxes.
Right. Well, yeah, because he'd actually have to pay a marginal tax rate of 28%. Let's see, 28% of 40 million. Let's see, that's 12 million. You know, that still leaves him a little better than $28 million to play with every year.
Uh-huh.
And he can't get by. Little Dominican boys must be expensive.
And what does he do for fun?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Get on the Gulfstream, jet with an illicit prescription for Viagra and head off to the child sex trade capital of the Western Hemisphere.
Oh, a sick person. I remember when I first started listening to him. I hate to admit it, but I've listened to him a few times. Back in the 80s, and his number one issue back then was a snail darter. I mean, that's what summed up the whole environmental movement as a snail darter. So it shows how out of whack he is.
Yeah, he is that.
But you were talking about guns earlier.
Mm-hmm.
You remember when some... I think about three. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, I hear some kind of noise. I think about battery might be doing bad or something, but I can tell you real quick, do you remember back when three policemen got killed in Birmingham? I think about 5 years ago.
That rings a bell.
And they were shot with some kind of ammunition that went through their vest. As I remember. And if they had a certain type of vest, it would have saved their lives, but they didn't have that. And the guy who shot them was on cocaine, and he had an AK-47, a certain type of ammunition. And my father has always been, he's been in the law enforcement business all his life, and he is dead set against people getting weapons like that. And he's in the police business. And I think there's a lot of policemen like that. They don't want to come up against people with all these military-style weapons.
Well, just look at what happened to the three officers in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
One right winger with an AK-47, and there are three families broken beyond repair, forever shattered.
Dude, I heard the other day that somebody was giving an account of all the right wing militia stuff going on in this country. I heard that some right wing militia, whatever, robbed a bank or something and got in a shootout with some with FBI. Did you hear about that?
No.
I guess it's been a number of years ago, might be the old news or something, but that shows how dangerous they are. You don't hear about people on the left getting shootout with the FBI.
Because we generally don't do that. Among other things, the left is a lot less prone to own firearms.
Yeah.
I guess we all assume, I guess the left or liberals or whatever tend to figure that if the time comes and we have to defend our homes, that we'll get the weapons then. But that until then, why waste the money?
Yeah. Hope it's not too late.
Yeah, I know. But, I know.
Yes. Oh, Tom Hartman today, he read something out of Mein Kampf, but he replaced Germany for America and Jews for liberals,
mm-hmm.
and it sounded just like the right-wing wackos of today.
Yeah, that's a neat little game that you can do with things like that, because without fail, they share a common language, and it is the language of eliminationism and the language of hate.
Yeah, it's just like the turn around big circle. The fascists are at it again. And some idiot at one of these tax parties the other day had a sign saying Obama was the Nazi.
Oh, those were all over the country, Alan. The Chairman Malbama, Obama, sign saying Hitler gave great speeches too. Obama is the Antichrist. Yeah, it was all there.
Well, I wouldn't say that George Bush was a Nazi, even though his grandfather did business with him. I mean, I wouldn't say George Bush was a Nazi, but he leaned towards fascism and not towards Nazism. I mean, you know, some people in the ovens and stupid stuff like that. It shows how ignorant these people are.
And dangerous.
Yeah, and dangerous. That's a good word, too.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I'll let you go, and I'll be listening and paying attention to my driving.
Yeah, it's always a good thing. Alan, you have a good weekend, and do drive carefully.
Okay,
Take care. Bye now.
Okay, bye.
On the road in Wisconsin, that's our buddy Alan the Trucker. Yeah, let's finish this off, because now you know that we're supposed to laugh about torture. Flimball had a high old time for three solid hours today. Here's a little bit more of that.
I mean, I wouldn't say that Barack Obama wants the country to get hit again, would you? You think Barack Obama has the has a desire for a terrorist attack on this country? I don't think that'd play right now very well, given what he wants to do with spending and so forth. But I do think that there is a complex among these people that won't happen when he's there. It just...
you know, it won't happen. You know, messianic type things are going to happen. These guys are going to read these memos. They're going to understand that, you know, it's not Bush anymore. Now, we're not out to harm them. Now, here we got these guys that we're talking about, they cut off their own wives' heads if they detect them doing something not within the bounds of the law. And we got memos out there today saying how rude and horrible and we are because we slap people. I just slap myself. I'm torturing myself right now. That's torture.
I'm almost beggared for words. I'm torturing myself. Imagine that. No, Rush, the way it works, if you really want to find out, you fly me down there, I wrap your head in the crook of my arm, and I squeeze your little neck. No, it ain't little. I squeeze your big old fat neck until the air's cut off, and then I start slapping the stuffing out of you, and it's none of this. It's not that. It's a full-on roundhouse smack. It's a hit. It's a strike. It's a blow. It's a battery. Repeatedly. And as you fade toward unconsciousness, and you begin to turn all blue, I let go of your neck and drop you to the floor, where you cronk your little head and your little noggin on the concrete, and I stand over you screaming at the top of my lungs, "Tell me what I want to know!" And you, Flush Flimball, will start singing like a canary. That's how that works. Just to be clear on it. My God. We are dealing with psychopathic monsters on the right wing. I don't know how else to characterize them. There goes, if I was still having to deal with right wingers, there'd be a call saying, "Well, you're just calling them names." No, these are psychological diagnoses. There's no gentle way to say a psychopath is a psychopath or a sociopath is a sociopath. It's a real term. And anyone who can't imagine that there's something wrong with taking a person unable to defend themselves. Remember, these are right-wingers, and they love their guns, and they absolutely stand fast upon the right of self-defense. Well, when you can't defend yourself, you are defenseless. But then again, if you tried to live inside a right-wing skull for a couple of days, you would run screaming into the night. Because it's just one great big reptilian herpetological Gordian knot of venomous conflicts. Back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello there.
Hey, what's up, Dave?
Oh, I'm just listening to you, as usual. I listen to you a lot. I don't always phone in.
I understand.
Just listening to your stuff, you know, I mean, this torture stuff. One of the things I say to my kids, a simple rule for life, is treat other people as you would like them to treat you. So if these torturer types think it's okay, let's turn it around and say, okay, let's do this to you, and then you can come back next week and let us know if you like it. Do you think that would be fair?
Well, in a way, I understand what you're getting at, Dave. But the thing is, just as a for instance, I don't know if it's like this. I don't know if it's like this in Canada, but in the United States, a police officer who is going to carry a taser has to first be tasered, and a police officer who is going to carry pepper spray has to first be pepper sprayed.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a problem, but within that scenario, the guy who's being tasered or pepper sprayed knows that there are medical professionals right there on the scene. There's a crash cart in case the taser stops his heart. There's cool water and paper towels to wipe down and clean up from the pepper spraying.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows it's all going to be okay because it's all done under controlled test conditions.
And he also knows how damn effective it's going to be.
Yeah.
Doesn't he?
Yeah.
Having experienced it, he absolutely knows how effective it's going to be. So really, is that a good thing to do that?
I don't know that it is a good thing. That's kind of what I'm getting at, because it's not that it's being done. I mean, you can't make facts appear inside the minds of someone you're detaining. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And
the other thing too is, if somebody's hurting you, you'll tell them anything you think is going to.
There, yes, exactly.
You won't tell them the truth. You'll tell them what you think they want to hear. And that's where torture falls down completely, isn't it?
Yes. Exactly.
So anyone who, I mean, I don't know if you remember, but the night good old Obama was elected, I was talking to you and I said, you know, I don't think this guy's going to be quite what people think. I think he's going to be taken in that little room and told who he really works for, and he's going to be just the same. I said that the night he was elected. I don't think I've been too far off.
There are differences that are substantive. But it seems like on all the close calls, the other side is getting the benefit of the doubt. Torture, domestic spying. I mean, my God, there was breaking news yesterday that the Bush administration actually tried to spy on a sitting member of Congress.
Mm-hmm. Well, why should they be exempt? You know, if they're going to spy on everybody, spy on everybody.
Yeah, sure.
Seems fair to me. You know, I mean, I'm pretty sure a lot of my phone calls get on tape.
Under the circumstances, I'm guessing that the second best archive of Head On with Bob Kincaid is probably in the bowels of the NSA.
Absolutely, for sure. I wouldn't say probably. You know, as you say, it's a bit like emails, though. I mean, your internet service provider keeps all your emails, but if you've deleted them, you can't get them back. You know, you try phoning an ISP and saying, oh, I just deleted an email. Can I get it back? Because I know you got records. I'm like, how long do you think it'll take them to stop laughing?
Right.
It's your information. They've got it. You went oops, but they won't give it back. You know? I don't know, I'm finding that the world is getting more bizarre by the day. I mean, watching that stuff around the G20 in the UK, and the guy, who, I don't know if you've been watching today, turns out, oh, it was a heart attack. Well, it turns out it was internal bleeding that killed the guy. So the policeman who walked up behind him, whacked him with a stick, and then pushed him over with his hands in his pockets, as he was quietly walking home from work, has been interviewed today under caution that he may be charged with manslaughter. Well, I think he should be charged with murder, not manslaughter. It was an illegal act and somebody died. That's murder. It's not manslaughter.
Well, it's never been lost on me that it's a matter of change in pronunciation between manslaughter and man's laughter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And especially when it comes to stuff like this. I mean, I'm English, as you know. I couldn't live there. George Orwell didn't have a clue. They're preemptively arresting protesters who want to go and protest against the climate.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah,
you know?
This is like something out of a Philip K. Dick short, the science fiction novel. This is it's Orwellian. It's Orwellian plus 10. There was a preemptive raid on people who were planning to go and protest a coal-fired power plant?
Carbon dioxide producer in the UK.
Yeah.
Yeah. And not only that, but police forces regularly photograph everybody, and they exchange information between Scotland, Ireland, Wales, UK, you know, England, all over the place. Everybody exchanges. It's all one big database, effectively. So if you protest in one place, they're looking out for you everywhere. You know, one of the things I think that would be a great thing would be National Disguise Day, where everybody wears a mask and say.
Oh, we've all seen the end of V for Vendetta.
and hold up their middle finger all damn day. Because these people have no right to follow me and watch every damn move I make. They have no right. That's where I stand on it.
Well, yeah, and it's interesting that back in the U.S., Dave, back in the heyday of the Klan, a lot of states passed anti-masking statutes.
Mm-hmm.
I believe West Virginia's is still on the books, that it is illegal to appear in public in a mask.
I'm pretty sure it is in Canada. In disguise? You're not liked very much if you want to change your appearance, so you're not recognizable. But I think everybody, we need a day where everybody does it. And say, okay, track that, you buggers. You know?
That's along the same lines of the subversion that I think about every time I go to the airport. And that is getting a national movement together where everybody goes through airport security, guys in Speedos and flip-flops and women in bikinis and flip-flops, no matter the age.
Yeah. Because you know what the airport security is about, don't you? Not about security. It's about how many million dollars were made by the people who made those machines.
Sure.
Because when I flew over to the UK in January, the first thing that happened, I always carry a Swiss Army knife. I find it really handy. It's with me 24/7, except when I have to get on a plane, of course. And so that was in my luggage. So I got on the plane, and the first thing they did was give me a real knife and fork. I got on with a knife. But as soon as I got on there with a meal, I got a real steel knife, and it was sharp too, and a real steel fork. But I couldn't have taken a pair of nail clippers on. So that right there tells you this is not about security. This is about getting people compliant and used to unreasonable stop and search. And it's about making a bloody fortune for the people who make those scanning machines and employing people to operate them. That's what it's about for me. That's my belief. That if it comes right down, that's the reason for this. It's about educating people to accept unacceptable stop and search.
Oh, I know. When I flew back from Dulles to Beckley, not too awfully long back, I try to be the very pleasant passenger, because I know that the Transportation Security Administration people are underpaid.
Mm-hmm.
I know they're stressed out.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that they if anybody who has been terrorized by the nobody wants to be the TSA worker who let the terrorist through.
No.
Right?
Oh, God, no. God, no.
So I try to dress well.
You didn't want to be on the plane when they blew it up if you were the guy that let it through.
Yeah, so I try to dress well, kind of look like somebody to the extent that I can.
Mm-hmm.
When I go through, so I'm standing there, I take off my shoes, cell phone and all, the usual procedure. And, keys and my cigarette lighter, everything.
You bad boy, you still smoke?
Oh, yes. When they let me into Betty Ford for 6 weeks, I'll probably get it licked.
Patch?
Nah, patch schmatch. I've had the patch. The patch ain't no match for my Jones. But anyway, so I go through there and just in the process of getting ready, I like to carry a toothbrush and one of those little travel toothpastes.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't realize that
classified as a liquid.
Well, no, wait. So I wasn't even thinking about it, and I'd been in a rush, and I was on the way out the door, and I grabbed my little thing of toothpaste and just dropped it in a pocket. And so I went through, I set off the alarm. I went through, I took off some more stuff, went through, set off the alarm. Took off some more stuff, went through, set off the alarm. Then finally,
about those flip-flops and
then finally, I get pulled out of the queue to go over for, like, intensive search. You have to stand in a plexiglass box.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's ridiculous. And then you have to go over and put your feet on two black little foot-shaped things and your arms out and blah, blah, blah. And then I fished into my pocket and went, holy crap. And the guy goes, that thing, it looks like a plastic tube, but it's got aluminum in it, and it sets them off every time. I wish they'd quit making them. And off I went along my merry way. But, you know, jeepers, I had these visions. You're talking, and the reason I tell the story, Dave, is because you talk about acclimating the public to be unreasonably searched and seized. You know, I'm standing there in the plexiglass box wondering if I'm, you know, next stop Guantanamo.
Oh, yeah, and this is the thing.
And tearing my clothing apart, trying to find out where, you know, where's the offense? Yeah. You know, has somebody dropped something in my, you know, what? Toothpaste.
Oh, yeah.
Toothpaste.
Yeah. Many years ago in England, I was in the wrong place at the wrong time. And I was kind of the prime suspect in a murder case. And I hadn't done a damn thing. I wasn't, you know. But it got really, really hairy and scary.
Oh, I can imagine.
But we interviewed 15, 20 times. And at the time, they were just releasing those Irish guys who'd been on a train playing cards, and the varnish on the cards had shown up as explosive residue, and I think they did 11 years. And they were just coming out when I was looking at this lot, and I'm thinking, Jesus, you know, what's going on here? So, I mean, I know that it can get seriously hairy, even though you're not. And as it turned out, for this one, it was a woman that did it, and they got her, and she admitted, so you're quite safe to talk to me, you know. But that was truly terrifying.
I can well imagine.
You're sitting there in a room with the nice cop and the nasty, you know, they do the nice and that, and I said to him at one point, you know, look, I know the game here. You'll be nice, you'll be nasty. You're going to swap around in a minute. Look, I'm at this point now. You can charge me or I'm leaving. And that's what I said, and I left. And that was the end of it. But it was absolutely all-consuming for about a month. Couldn't think about anything else. It was truly terrifying. And this is the kind of thing that can happen with a tube of toothpaste. You know?
Yeah, I know.
And this is the world we live in. I don't know.
And yet, I was, you know, I was the potential threat. Or, you know, your Swiss Army knife was a
bit. You're doing now, aren't you? To
say again?
You're more of a threat doing what you're doing right now to these people.
Oh, Jesus, don't say that. I'll be out of it. I won't have anything to do for 3 hours a night. I won't have anything to do for 24 hours a day. I'll be in a box with a bug. Quit it, Dave.
But really, you know, that really is the truth of the situation. You know, that going through the airport with a tube of toothpaste, you're absolutely no threat whatsoever. But making people think, come on, can't be doing that now.
Yeah, Jesus, what's the headline? Middle-aged hillbilly terrorist had great smile? What?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you could probably, once you got out, you could probably get an advertising gig with one of the toothpaste manufacturers, you know?
Oh, no, I think if they take Michael Phelps off the cornflakes for honking on a bong, you know, no, my endorsement possibilities are severely circumscribed.
Yeah, my endorsement possibilities are less than zero, you know, but in the world we inhabit right now, maybe one day. Maybe one day you will become somebody who is respected and dealt with, and you can make millions by saying, I support this. You know? Why not?
Torture makes me laugh. Where's my 40 million?
Yeah, there you go. If somebody like old Rush can make the kind of coin he makes on the radio, why are you broke? You got better things to say.
Oh, why indeed? That's the question I've been asking for about six years now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's effective.
Well, so I was answering a question earlier today, Dave, and it was a form. I'll be honest, I was applying for some funding to get the horn to an event later this year. And the question was, where do you see yourself in 5 years? And Jesus, I thought I'd left that behind back when I was sitting in job interviews as a young man.
Yeah.
And I hate that question. I hate that question.
Well, one of the things I said to my kids is, where do you see yourself in 10 years? And both of them said, I don't know. I said, well, let me just say something to you. Whatever you said to me, I was just going to say you're wrong.
Yeah.
Because if somebody had said to me 15 years ago that I would be where I am right now, I would have said, that's some mighty good stuff you've been smoking.
You're quite mad, yeah. But this time I just said, look, where I'll be in 5 years is where I am right now. Because I'm where I am right now because I am trying to fill a need that no one, that not too many other people are doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that,
I said to you before, more power to you. I mean,
yeah, so, you know, I hope that wasn't taken as being too snarky, but I guess it could come across that way. But daggummit, you know, these conversations have to happen, Dave.
They do.
You know, liberals talking among decent human beings talking among decent human beings have to happen. Yeah, you know, 3 hours a day of that's not torture is not conducive to a national dialogue on how to be a better nation.
No. All it requires is for people to actually think about what's going on and find out what's going on. And that's we've been down this one before, you and me, around that little box in the corner. I mean, I don't have one of those. And I go out and I find out what's going on for myself. Yeah, I read CNN, I read the BBC, because you've got to know what the buggers want you to think to make sense of what's really going on. So you do have to watch the mainstream stuff, because you know that's what the powers that be want you to think. And then when you run across the real information and you put them side by side, that's the only way to make sense of the world.
There you are.
Why I say make sense of it, when I say make sense, I think I'm using the term fairly loosely, sense of the world, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. Have enough reality to hang on to just keep you from running screaming naked into the yard? Yeah.
Well, if I ran screaming naked, I'd fall off the end of the balcony and go splat. I wouldn't really care.
Yeah, well, you're in that whole take the elevator thing, and that just makes the insanity a little more.
I don't do elevators. I do 4 flights, 2 at a time. 3 times a day, 4 times a day.
Well, Dave, good talking to you, brother. I've got to run on. I got some stacking up going on here, but thanks so much, and have a great weekend.
And I'm glad you liked the email. Anyway.
I did indeed.
We'll talk.
Take care. Bye now.
You too. Bye.
On we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Vince.
What's up?
Not a heck of a lot. How the heck have you been?
I've been all right. Can't complain.
Good.
Still employed, so that's definitely something.
At this point, you're ahead of the game for a lot of folks in this country.
Yeah. I just wanted to point out, earlier you were talking about how these guys are screaming self-defense rights. Isn't it funny how all of a sudden nobody has the right to defend themselves whenever they're talking about defending themselves from us? Because anytime anyone ever starts getting the means to do so, we start talking about how we've got to do an intervention because, oh my God, they're getting nukes.
Yeah, well, you're absolutely right, and that's kind of where I was going. And in fact, I assume you are still in Florida. That being the case, it's worth noting that the right-wing self-defense meme has been taken so far that in the state where you are, self-defense extends to and includes simply being scared of someone. You live in a state where if you're scared of someone, you have a right to kill them.
Yep. Ain't it funny? And people wonder why I don't own a gun. I have one of those tempers that is not conducive to living in a state with that law. That's just me.
I understand. But there's a whole bunch of people that are in the same place you are that do have guns.
This is true, and that's a very scary thought. I try not to think about it.
Yeah, Florida, you know, and Florida's not known for being necessarily the calmest state in the union.
Well, let me tell you a fact here, Bob. Is I live near Jacksonville, which is very quickly becoming known as the murder capital of the state. I don't know if any of our other listeners are in this area, but. You know, it seems just about every night we're hearing about somebody getting shot or the police shooting somebody or something along those lines. And, you know, I used to be the sort of person who, you know, somebody cut me off on the road or something, I'd speed up next to them and yell, "Hey, jerk," or, you know, whatever. One guy did that to me one time. I've actually got a pretty funny story where one guy in a Mustang did that to me one time, and we pulled up to a stoplight. I kept telling him, "Hey, "Hey man, you're not impressing anybody," and he kept revving his engine. I kept saying, "You're still not impressing anybody." Light turns green, he guns it, and little did he know, while I was egging him on, a Camden County Sheriff's officer came up right behind him. I drove by him again a few minutes later. "You're still not impressing anybody, least of all him."
As he's signing the ticket?
Basically, yes. I don't do that stuff anymore.
Not where you... No. No, you live
not
in...
Where I am.
You live in an armed camp.
Pretty much, yeah. And I mean, that was in Georgia. That's not exactly, you know, the most liberal-leaning state in the world either. But, you know, that should tell you something that, you know, I thought I had the freedom to do that there. And I just assume, you know, people cut me off and I'm just like, slow down, don't say nothing. Just keep driving, smile.
Exactly. Well, I am glad to know you're still employed. Are you getting along okay down there?
Yeah, actually, I got a promotion a couple of months ago. I'm working as basically a floor agent now, where basically the people who are the first-level agents that I was, basically if they get stuck in a hole or if somebody demands to speak to the supervisor, they end up talking to me. So I deal with angry.
Oh, man, you're an enforcer.
Not really an enforcer, just kind of, you know, people have questions or get stuck or something and just need pointing in the right direction. I go over and I say, well, look at this or do this or... Try doing that. I'm a peer coach, basically. I actually just got a sensitivity training today because they wanted us to, you know, learn how to be effective communicators and stuff of that nature. And basically, yeah, if you call into my company and you're mad about something, you say, "I want to talk to your supervisor," it eventually gets to, I'm the first level supervisor, basically.
You're the first escalation.
Basically, yes. And the sad thing is that, you know, if you escalate to me, then you've actually got some help at getting your issue solved. And then if you get mad at me and escalate further to me, I send you to my supervisor, who has no technical knowledge whatsoever and is probably just going to end up telling you we can't help you or dump it back to me. So, you know. You know what's really sad thing? You know what the really sad thing is, Bob, is that you know how much I get paid for this? I get paid an extra dollar a day, and that's only as a shift differential.
A day?
Or, pardon me, $1 an hour.
Okay.
It's a $1 an hour differential, which comes out to about $8 a day. And the thing is that we're not this all the time. We spend about, we spend a certain amount of times where we're acting as this, you know, in this advisory, because we're not really supervisors. We're kind of more, you know, basically just second tier consultants or whatever you want to call us. But basically, you know, we serve for a couple of weeks in that capacity, and then we serve for a couple of weeks in the capacity of we're basically back as regular agents again. And when we're back as regular agents, we get paid as a shift differential. We don't actually get our job title changed or anything, because then that would, like, do a whole bunch of stuff with the union that the company don't want to have to deal with. So they basically were, as far as job titles are concerned in the company, or on my resume or anything, I'm no different than the guy on the phones, although I get a ton more responsibility.
So without naming names or anything, is it a union shop?
Yes.
Beautiful.
We are represented by the Communication Workers of America.
I figured CWA would be, yeah. Well, at least you've got that going for you. That's something that a lot of people don't have.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm not 100% happy with our union, but it's better than nothing. And, I mean, as far as companies go, I sometimes talk and I complain and whatnot, but the truth of the matter is the company I work for isn't really all that bad. I mean, our shop is still technically hiring while everyone else is still laying off, so, you know, can't really complain much there.
Well, good.
Very quick, I thought I lost you.
No, I'm right here. Did you say Jacksonville is the murder capital of Florida?
Some people have referred to it as. I don't know what the statistics actually are, but I know, I mean, literally, you turn on the news at any given point in day and somebody got shot or somebody got arrested or somebody got, you know, chased down and shot by the cops. I mean, it's just, we average about one homicide a week here, I'm pretty sure.
Sheesh. But you haven't run out and got... Were there any big teabagging parties there in
Oh Oregon? Yeah, they were we got I'm not sure how familiar you are or anybody else listening to the show might be, but we basically are on a big river. It's the St. John's River, only other river in the world other than the Nile that flows northward. Interesting useless fact there. there, but yeah, they were all out there in droves shoving, you know, tea and everything into the river and whatnot. And I'm sitting here going, oh, gee, thanks, guys. Not only are you not really contributing anything and just complaining about the fact that you're not, you're mad about the fact you actually have to, you know, pay up for the services you use, but now you're also polluting my river. Gee, thanks.
Oh, so they actually did dump stuff?
Oh, yeah, they were dumping stuff all in that river.
You know, I'd think that Florida would be a little, I mean, they didn't get away with dumping anything in the Potomac. In D.C., I'd think that Florida would be a little touchy about that.
You would think so. I mean, I'm not sure how. I mean, I'm not sure of the legality of it. I don't know if they were technically allowed to do it, but I do know that they did. I was off that day, but you know, I did. I wasn't going to go out and you know deal with that because I have a certain you know again the whole getting shot thing.
Yeah, there's that.
Yeah.
So best to avoid it. But did what they did of it? Did you see any coverage? Was it the usual Obama hate fest?
Pretty much, yeah. Obama's a Nazi, you know. A couple people were like that darn Muslim, and you know, even there's still a lot about that. I don't.
It sounds like a bad right wing sitcom. That darn Muslim.
I know, right? But I mean, yeah. It was. I mean, pretty much the same usual suspects. They just spew out the same talking points that they always do. I mean, did you really expect anything else? I mean, come on.
Nah, not really when you get right down to it.
Originality is not these guys' strong suit. But anyways, you know, they did that, and I think there was some small counter-protest or something. And, I mean, for the most part, it was a fairly small thing. I'll tell you one thing. Even though the city itself seems a little bit more violent than I'm used to, it may also be, too, that I just came from kind of a small-town environment before this. This is really the first time I've lived in anything resembling a big city. And I'm not even in Jacksonville proper. I'm on the outskirts of the city.
Yeah, but it still takes some getting used to.
It does. I mean, I literally, right now, well, let me just tell you what I'm looking at right now. I'm standing out on my balcony, and what I'm watching right now is a P-3 Orion taken off from the Navy base that sits about 4 miles off the end of where I am right now.
Oh, what, Jacksonville NAS?
Yeah.
Yeah, my uncle used to command that joint.
Oh, that's funny.
Way, way, way long ago.
Small world. But, yeah, I'm standing here watching a P-3 Orion take off from there right now. And, I mean, I literally, if I felt the need to go out to a burger joint or something, I don't have to get in my car and walk out there. I mean, it's not big city living, but, I mean, on the other hand, you know, it's not small town anything. Fairly congested area. And I lucked out. I'm actually living in a nice area of town. You know, you go too far in either direction, you start getting people shooting at each other. But the area I'm in isn't too bad. Very quiet and whatnot. But, I mean, I'll tell you the one thing I've noticed here that I didn't notice in Georgia, and that even though you do have that environment here, for the most part, people, you don't have as many right-wingers. I mean, in Georgia, they weren't crazy about it, but everybody was pretty much a right-winger. They all were drinking the Kool-Aid to some degree, even if they weren't necessarily gung-ho about it. You know, they all generally had McCain-Palin stickers, even if they just, well, I'm just voting for him because that's what I feel is my moral responsibility. Okay, fine, if that's what you want to do.
Oh, hey, Vince, I got to tell you, I just got an email in from our buddy Kate.
Yeah.
And she said, congratulations on being and still being employed, and wants to know if your Frosties still melt during prayer in the drive-thru.
Actually, no, it's actually been kind of cool here this last time around. The heat really hasn't got kicked in yet. Unless I completely missed the joke or something.
No, well, you may recall at one point we were talking about how y'all had to stop and let the Frosties melt at the Wendy's drive-thru while your fundy wingnut boss prayed over him.
That's right. Now I remember. The guy who was at the drive-thru praying over his meal while I'm standing behind him going, dude, my Frosty's melting in the window. Will you knock it off? Yeah, they're not that quite bad. I mean, I'll tell you the truth, man. I mean, most everybody who lives around me, for the most part, is not a right-winger. There are a lot of people who have Obama stickers or no stickers, and, you know, there are a definite lack of, you know, there's quite a few W stickers still around, but not a lot of McCain stickers and whatnot, as you might find. But, you know, I'm definitely in a more diverse area than I used to be.
Well, very cool. Very cool.
And you know, for all intents and purposes, Florida is kind of a Yankee state that was just kind of adopted by the South.
Kind of depends on where you are.
Kind of. But, I mean, this is kind of one of the areas, too. You don't really have that fundyism going right in this area that you do have really bad if you go a couple, about an hour or so got that going to it too. I don't run around and run into people talking about God every 5 seconds like I used to. Although when I did first move here, there was a guy standing out on the corner during Friday night when everybody was going out to the club screaming at the top of his lungs about how the world was coming to an end and had the cardboard sign with Jesus is coming written on it. So, you know, I guess it takes all kinds.
Yeah, Jesus is coming. Get the Kleenex. Yeah,
right. Yeah, I know. If Jesus is coming, look busy.
Hey, Vince, it's good to hear from you, brother.
Always, Bob. I'll try and check in more often. I'm working fairly early shifts next week, so I may call in sometime next week.
Well, chime right in as the spirit moves you.
All right, sir. Hi, everybody. Sorry I've been not in the chat room. Hope everybody's doing well, and I'll talk to you all later.
Okay, take care, Vince.
All right, bye, Bob.
Bye now. Jesus is coming. Look busy. Oh, God. And I'm going right back to the phones. If you're on hold, please stay that way for a second. But I got to point something out to you. This in from David in Tennessee. In regard to torture, I love the way that you guys take an idea and then sort of give it a double dose of reality. With regard to all the torture techniques that are laid out in the memos that we've talked about, from the slapping, the walling, the slamming, bashing, crashing, mashing, breaking, etc., and waterboarding, don't forget drowning, David notes, these various non-torture acts of torture could be combined. Combined. You know, one from column A, two from column B combined. So, since it was approved, a prisoner could be kept awake for 10 to 11 days and then tortured, that's interrogated via another technique. Chew on this for a minute. You've been awake for 6 days. That's wake up on Tuesday and you're still awake on Monday. And then they put you in the 4x4x4 foot box with a bug or a caterpillar. At day six of being awake, When they tell you, here comes the bug, how rational are you going to be? How much sanity are you going to have left to spare for that process? And let's remember, while the ugly little fascists like Flush Flemball are giggling and slapping themselves behind the microphone, let's remember this. None of these people had been afforded any sort of system of proof of guilt or innocence at all. They were captured or kidnapped, taken to where they were taken, be it CIA black site, Bagram Air Force Base, Abu Ghraib, or Guantanamo Bay, and things like this were done to them. Without regard, I really can't emphasize this strongly enough, without regard to guilt or innocence. Therein lies the absolute definition of Kafkaesque, speaking of bugs. Let that rattle around on you for a few minutes. Without regard to guilt or innocence. That is literally being hauled out of your home at 3 o'clock in the morning and punished for stuff you don't even know if you did. Those are the screams and cries in the dark and still of the night that in some other language translate as, I don't know, I was just tending my herd. Please, why don't you believe me? I don't know. And day one or day 41 of the torture continues. Thanks for pulling that together, David. I appreciate it. Wake up on Tuesday, still awake on Monday, then the 4x4 foot box, or maybe then the walling, or maybe then anything, and then some more, and then some more. And these monstrous memos say that because none of these things are done for extended periods of time, it's okay. By the way, enforced sleep deprivation, 11 days. There was a story, and it resulted in a sort of a study some years back, of a DJ. Just a DJ. Once upon a time, you know, disc jockeys did stunts back in the day when radio was sort of real. He was just a DJ, and he stayed up continuously for days on end for publicity purposes. And because he did that, he never quite got his life back. And he either wound up dying of some sort of god-awful disease or blowing his brains out, hanging himself, something. All because of something as seemingly innocuous as sleep deprivation. Gosh, it just sounds so clean and clinical when you say it that way. Sleep deprivation. When you take a human being and you deprive them of sleep, crazed things happen in the mind. And the way you keep them from going to sleep, that's a whole other kettle of fish. Back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Preston.
Just an excellent discussion on a lot of issues. And I actually asked people on your chat room if they were familiar with a movie called Torturing Democracy. It played over a few PBS stations in this country about a month or two ago. And it really laid a lot of stuff out. And it was actually kind of disturbing just watching it, learning how people were being tormented with the sort of thing you just described, and also with music, endless music pounded into their heads, light, usage of light, strobe lighting, and, you know, this visual assault. It was interesting because I went to work the next day, and somebody I worked with saw it as well and had the same reaction, just how it made her sick to her soul. And, and then to hear Rush Limbaugh talking about Club Gitmo and what fun this resort is. And they're getting the best meals and medical care they ever received. They forget the part about why they need so much medical care. You know, we're inflicting the damage on them. You know, they gave us those images of people from time to time being wheeled between cages and dark rooms and stuff, and they're on these like wheelbarrows that looked like something out of some medieval torture chamber device, and this guy's laying on their back in their orange jumpsuits, and
well, that's because they are from some sort of medieval torture chamber device.
The
half of the stuff going on at Guantanamo, Preston, and I'm not exaggerating, was part of the standard manual of operations of the Spanish Inquisition in Torquemada. I mean, these things go way back.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
So, by the way, you mentioned Rush. All this talk of torture and him slapping himself on the air and everything. Do you know what the context was that all of it? Today was the day that he plugged for people to donate to the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. He's really, really proud of his work doing that.
Yeah, that's like a personal PR campaign he does for himself. You know, look at how generous I am. So, yeah, the self.
And in the course of pitching for that, and, you know, I'm one of these people that wants more research on both topics, leukemia, lymphoma. You know, how are we to know that maybe stem cell research might not cure some of that? But in the course of pitching for that, he joked that for every ditto head who donates, there's a gift of some clothing, a T-shirt or whatever, and his running gag was that all the ditto head clothing they'd be shipping out would be black to commemorate the Obama economy. The Obama economy. Not the Bush economy.
Right.
But black has nothing to do with the economy either. it's
not the war economy.
Yeah, no. No, this is all sort of skewed tangential race references, and they're really sickening.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, they can go after civil rights leaders on a regular basis, and it's really shameful. And it's 24, that program. I think Rush made a cameo on that program, or he was on the set of it during a taping. And 24 helped to cultivate this medieval torture mentality. There was the hunky, what's his name? Talk about a sellout collaborator in the field of acting for, what is that? Kiefer Sutherland.
Yeah.
To do that shameful role. And then he was stumping for John McCain also. Shameful. But, it's interesting. I think his father, Donald Sutherland, was in a movie called, The Body Snatchers, I think, where people get taken over.
The remake, or entirely possible.
Yeah, it's been a retake. Yeah, kind of a soul snatching going on. Or what, Public Enemy, that song, Who Stole the Soul, I think. But, I think the way to respond, though, to this 24-type mentality is to give more publicity to the people in the military who are so diametrically opposed to it all. I just found this book by Captain Paul Chappelle called Will War Ever End? A Soldier's Vision of Peace for the 21st Century. And his credentials that he went to West Point in 2002, was deployed to Baghdad during 2006 and 7. He now serves as the commander of a Patriot battery at Fort Bliss, Texas. And he is finishing his second book, Peaceful Revolution, which explains in detail how together we can end the wars between countries, our ongoing war with nature, and the suffering in our hearts. And it's actually prefaced by another admirable gentleman named Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman. He's written a lot about the media desensitizing us and pitting us against others. So anyway, maybe someday Kiefer Sutherland will play Captain Paul Chappelle instead of these pathological monsters, psychopathic monsters. I think that term you use is appropriate.
I don't know how we don't use them at this point, Preston.
Mm. And the reptilian brain, Tom Hartman's actually written a lot, or has referenced stuff about that as well, some psychological studies about, parts of our brain that are kind of manipulated.
Well, I noticed I noticed Janine Garofalo going on rather at length on Keith Olbermann's show about right-wingers and their limbic brain system.
Oh, really? Interesting. It's great to see that she's out there again.
Yeah, I guess maybe it was last night. I don't know. I was watching it in snippets online. So, I think her tongue was somewhat in her cheek, but somewhat not. And talking about the lizard brain responses of right wingers, and how it is not a normal or typical human response.
Okay. Speaking of 24, Janine actually was on a.
I know. Yeah. And that's kind of weird.
I thought so too, but I didn't watch her performances and I didn't hear anything about her performances. I'm hoping, I don't know this at all, but I was thinking, well, maybe there's been some shifting writers or whatever at 24, I don't know. Or maybe there's something about her playing that character that she felt maybe she could accomplish within that ugly program. I don't know, maybe she did. But either way, it's great to see her back at it. And hopefully, the money that she makes, she puts to a good cause. I bet she does. So, we can use the system in some ways.
Yes. Very true.
But I don't know. Actually, I was going to say something in defense of reptiles, though. Turtles just don't act that messed up. I don't think not what I know of them. I think they're pretty much vegans, pretty casual creatures, and ancient, beautiful creatures under assault.
Right.
Big time.
Well, you know, look, what kind of hysteria grips the nation, Preston, when, as happened just a few nights ago, even as I was on air, what kind of hysteria grasps the nation when CNN will put a breaking news banner on its website that says gator under car in Florida? I mean, at that point, have we abandoned all pretense of sanity? They really did it, Preston. There was a banner at the big black box and it says, breaking news. Alligator under car in Florida.
Well, I'm surprised we haven't gotten the deluge of, you know, gator attacks, you know, which, you know, no doubt go on and they're tragic, but, you know, they emphasize that kind of stuff to get people.
But, you know, I would hazard to guess, Preston, that, probably 9 out of 10 alligator attacks are precipitated not by the alligator, but by the human.
Yeah, the headline should be man encroaching or something.
Right.
Like
I mean,
that.
I'm a very bad golfer, and I used to play. I haven't played golf in forever, but I still consider myself a golfer. And on the times that I used to get to take vacations down to L.A., otherwise known as Lower Alabama, I would always play golf down there. Beautiful state park course. And on that state park course, as you get near a water hazard, it's all kind of bayou land down there anyway. But as you get close to the water hazards have signs around them that say,
yeah,
do not attempt to retrieve golf balls from water hazard. Then big, bold letters, alligator hazard.
Okay.
And invariably, you know, some idiot will go down there because he doesn't want to give up a $3.15 Titleist and come back wondering what the hell happened to his mashy niblick.
And what a waste of land, of valuable land. You know, what was once nature, a natural ecosystem, to be so manipulated by these sprawling golf courses and sprawl in general. You know,
well, there's a right way and a wrong way to do them.
Yeah.
If you look at the links as they developed in Scotland, granted it was a province of the wealthy, but it was basically sheep pasture land. And so bunkers developed where hillocks were that the sheep would stand behind to get out of the wind and quietly graze away until they'd eaten everything away but the sand.
Interesting.
And
you know, it can have its appropriate places. You know,
yeah, they were
foisted on communities and.
Yeah, they were very organic things.
Right, right.
A buddy of mine who is also a golfer and I were talking the other day about the guy who won the Masters, Angel Cabrera. There were snide comments made about him and. Well, if he's gonna play in America, he needs to learn spike English. Well, the man is an international golfer, okay? And there are other places on the planet that have nice golf courses besides Florida, Arizona, and California.
Yeah, yeah.
And he plays them. He's from Argentina.
Yeah.
This notion that somehow or another, resort communities, gated communities, blah, 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 blah. We've got a golf resort community not too far from where I live that at one point in time had no roads in it. The only way you got to it was by helicopter. And for the most part, it was coal barrens.
Yeah.
I've played it a couple of times, you know, since then. There are roads. But, no, I object to the humongous housing developments and
yeah.
But just because of the zen quality of the game, I can't object to the game because it's such a great way to go out and get inside your own skull and find out how you operate. You know, what did Mark Twain call it? A good walk spoiled.
That's right. And a good game of putt-putt every now and again.
Yeah, the windmill and the clown still have my name. But the email that I had from our buddy Scott in Sweden a few weeks ago, talking about his Swedish neighbors who took a golf vacation to the United States, came to Florida, and were appalled to find out. And I mean, the reason they took up golf was because it was enjoyable and it was a nice walk. And they came to Florida to play golf only to find out that they weren't allowed to walk. They had to rent rent the golf cart. You know, there's a little different argument at a place like West Virginia where golf is concerned, and there's a lot of uphill and down dale. But Lord God, when you're playing golf in Florida, you can drop a marble and it won't move. You know, walk. That's what it's for.
I was going to say that the animal, the species that we're kind of warring against in some of the media is cougars. There have been some, you know, McMansion developments and, and cougars are, you know, having interactions. Terrible ones sometimes. And, again, they're emphasizing that. And, you know, why, you know, it's that theme of fear in everything, in nature, in our own nature. Anyway, I wanted to mention your comment about how the patch is no match for your Jones, your cigarette Jones.
Yeah.
That's an interesting line. I was wondering if you were familiar with something called Iboga.
No.
It's I was reading about it on Wikipedia. And it's
E-B-O-G-A?
E-B-O-G-A, yes. That's right. And they mention how it's used in this Bwiti religion practiced in West Central Africa, mainly Gabon, Cameroon, and the Republic of the Congo. It's taken in massive doses by initiates when entering the religion, and on a more regular basis is eaten in smaller doses in connection with rituals and tribal dances. They usually perform at night. Bwitis have been subject to persecution by Catholic missionaries who to this day are thoroughly opposed to the growing religious movement of Bwiti. But the resistance to the authoritarian branch of Catholicism, Leon Mba, before becoming the first president of Gabon in 1960, defended the Bwiti religion and the use of Iboga in French colonial courts. On June 6, 2000, the Council of Ministers of the Republic of Gabon declared Iboga to be a national treasure. And in lower doses, Iboga has a stimulant effect and is used to maintain alertness while hunting. So another fascinating species to get to know.
Well, and you know, again, that's the humanity being humanity. Virtually every variant of the human species has found something to alter its reality.
Mm-hmm.
Your forebears and my forebears, you know, mainly white Europeans, found booze, whether it be wine or cereal grains or my favorite of all, honey, mead. That was their totemic passport to the spirit world.
Mm-hmm.
The same may be said for peyote, what is it? Ayahuasca, mushrooms.
There's something called khat.
Khat, yes, khat.
In Yemen.
And I heard some reference to the Somali pirates being young guys all high on khat.
Interesting.
I think it was Mark Levine who said that.
Okay.
I think it's K-H-A-T or something like that. Yeah. But all of humanity alters its reality as a means of dealing with the prevalence during the rest of the time of reality. And by the way, an email just rolled in, and you can do this or I can do this. We can both do this. Kate wants to, she says, what is 24? Explain to we who are culturally illiterate. How do we do this in a couple of minutes? 24.
Okay.
Yeah, 24 is an hour-long program that airs on the Fox network that is immensely popular, especially with military types, right-wingers, and people who are scared of everything that goes bump in the night. It centers on a guy played by Kiefer Sutherland who is, what would you say, counter-terrorist, I guess you'd call him.
Yeah.
And he goes around foiling plots by beating the stuffing out of people and torturing them and pinching them in wicked ways and dealing with bureaucrats who don't understand what a ferocious and deadly terrorist infested world we live in. And at one point, didn't they set up some squishy liberal politician who in the plot line screwed up so bad that a nuclear device went off somewhere in the United States? Didn't they do that?
That sounds like something they do. You know, every now and again they'll throw in a progressive storyline. It's kind of a sop, I think, to people. I mean, they don't want to be completely obvious, I guess. In fact, when I approach some liberal people, they'll bring up these lines about, well, there's a black president and there are some progressive elements here and there, and they're exposing a couple figures as being, you know, corrupt and, you know, part of this complex. And you know, so it's a mix, but generally speaking, it's very reactionary, incredibly, you know, authoritarian promotion of torture. And, you know, the U.S., the poor put upon military empire, is always on the brink of extermination. You know, there's never a look at what the empire is doing to the global south ever. So that's out of consciousness. It's always us under threat.
Right. And we never do anything to deserve it. You know, you mentioned the global south. That reminds me of something. I saw news coming out of Colombia. There is a strike going on there, and I'm mighty proud of them. You know, we've talked in the past, Preston, about Drummond Coal Corporation.
Yeah.
And their extractive activities in Colombia. There are two companies that are idled right now. Drummond is one, headquartered out of Birmingham, Alabama. The other, however, is a Swiss outfit. And for the life of me, I can't remember the name, and I'm trying to see now if I can find it. I don't see it right off the bat. But anyway, they're idled because they can't get their coal to market because people working for the railroads are demanding recognition for their union. And the railroads are not running.
Great.
And I read that this morning and was simply inspired. Because, you know, Drummond Cole is one of the offenders in right-wing Colombia who has routinely gone out, it is alleged, and had union organizers murdered rather than pay a living wage and recognize collective bargaining.
Yep. It'll be interesting what some of the discussions might be floating around it in Trinidad and Tobago coming up. I think this weekend is this conference of Latin America. Obama's attending it.
Yeah, it's actually the Summit of the Americas, isn't it?
Okay, that's it. You know, Obama did speak powerfully about you know, the paramilitaries and the need for, you know, labor protections. Be good if he's able to continue those discussions. And, you know, it was good to see maybe some progress here on relations with Cuba. Some people being able to travel, send remittances, stuff like that.
Yeah, I think I figured out what my travel itinerary is if I ever get the money to do it, Preston. I'm going to go down and do the Mayan pyramids. And then I'm going to go over somewhere, Cozumel, whatever, and hop a flight to Cuba. And I'm going to see Cuba before corporate America gets in and ruins it. You know, before there's a McDonald's and a Burger King and a Quiznos on every corner.
Right. Let's hope it's not that corporate colonization of the.
But you and I, but we both know it will be.
I'm not sure. Or maybe partially or not entirely. There'll always be segments where it is more organic and people-centered and fair trade-related. Yeah, there'll be certainly all kinds of problems. You know, there'll be a big boom in this sex, child exploitation and grotesque things like that.
Well, if places like Haiti and the Dominican Republic are any indication, you're absolutely correct.
Yeah. But, again, there are these growing connections for different visions. There's a lot of feminist, international feminist solidarity stuff going on. Things like the vagina dialogues and stuff like that have, and actually Jenna Bush's book talks a lot about those issues. And so, you know, in that family, in the Bush family, you see transformation taking place.
Indeed.
To some degree.
Well, I did see a headline the other day that said Barbara Bush to marry, and I just screeched, what? That old beat. And then I realized there's another Barbara Bush. But I've had this horrible nightmare vision of that hateful old beast clutching her pearls and wearing a wedding gown. It was like something from Tales from the Crypt.
Before I let you go, Bob, I didn't quite get to the entire point about Iboga.
Yes, really. Yes.
Okay, the patch may not be its match, but something to consider, or just to know that other people have utilized it for this purpose, that it's been used as in treating opiate addictions, heroin addicts, and people addicted to cocaine have used this. And it's actually, they have clinics of it in places like Mexico.
Another stop on my itinerary.
They're illegal here, but they're still informal clinics that have propped up, come up anyway. And they say it could treat alcohol and nicotine addictions as well. I don't know, but, you know, something to explore maybe. You know, it's kind of a radical concept, too, and kind of poetic that, our African-American communities have been so...
brutalized by addiction?
Yep, especially...
Deliberately?
Yep. Especially these kind of synthetic, chemically involved, recently created things like cocaine and crack, you know, involving DuPont's chemicals, coincidentally. Oh, what do you know? A created market, once again. And with no traditional uses. I mean, there are no traditional uses of crack and stuff like that. Heroin, that's a misuse, and it's...
Yeah, there is no traditional use of meth.
Right, right. So to have this thing from the earth that provides a potential healing, being a healer in their lives, when you had mentioned that all of humanity has used this stuff, it even goes beyond that. The animal
kingdom does too,
yeah,
yes.
Your listeners might want to check out, or at least check on Amazon, a book called Animals and Psychedelics, or Psychedelics and Animals. I think it's Animals and Psychedelics, and there's this one story of these birds. I think they go to California, and each year they time it so they arrive when the berries from this tree fall to the ground, ferment, and they scoop them up and get drunk, and they just fly around.
I remember sitting in my biology class in Alabama watching birds get wasted.
Okay.
And again, eating fermented berries, and we had highly reflective windows, and the poor little things would get so high that they would think that their reflection was an aggressive other bird.
Oh, no.
Fly right into the glass, knock themselves stupid. Saw it happen on more than one occasion.
Sounds like a story from mythology almost, right?
I'm sure there's deeper meaning there. Preston, great talking to you, and have a wonderful weekend, okay?
You do the same.
Bye now. Bye. Well, that, my friends, my neighbors, that's 3 hours that I don't know where it went. And I still got more torture stuff that's just sitting here making me crazy. But again, it makes, if I go extra innings, it makes Ben Burch's life a little bit more complicated than Ben Burch's life ever needs to be, so I won't. I will, however, remind you to please tune in for the weekend schedule. Rick's Place with horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner coming your way, as well as the Rick Smith Show and Night Sounds with Billy Shears, all part of the weekend rotation, all the way up to 9 p.m. Sunday night Eastern Time when All Foxed Up with John Fox comes your way. And therein, another opportunity for live conversation. Thank you. Thank you, everyone who is stepping up to try to help us reach our goal, our fundraising goal, our monthly fundraising goal, no getting around it. We are right at, let's see. Yep, we're 2 days past halfway through April, and we are right at halfway, the halfway mark of our fundraising goal. And it is only through your own generosities that we've gotten that far. What you do when you support the Horn is nothing short of supporting a paradigm shift in how we do information delivery in this country. A quick note back in from Kate regarding 24. Well, dang, that makes me want to run right out and buy a TV box. Sounds so intellectually stimulating. Living in the Ninth Ward in New Orleans, I guess I have all the action I need. We got us some pretty reptiles up the bayou across the street. And down here, we eat our vanilla ice cream with Crystal hot sauce. So there. I think I could use a little vanilla ice cream with some Crystal hot sauce. I'm culinarily adventuresome. Dang straight. So I hope you'll be with me when I crank up my new week on Monday. In the meantime, however, there is great programming over the weekend. I hope you'll check it out. Many thanks, as ever, go out to our IT professional, Peter Godbold. I hear that Larry is getting better. Larry Sanders, whom Peter refers to as the world's most dangerous and yet somehow lovable DJ. I hope he continues to mend and heal, as I know you all do as well. Thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer, chief musician, webmaster, web designer, guy we couldn't get along with, out. Guy we couldn't get along with, out. There we go. The words all just fly out. So, and it's Friday. So there. Thanks to John Fox. Thanks to our moderators in the chat room, mods on the forum. Thanks to Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk. When I think about what Ben Birch has done since 2002 with WhiteRoseSociety.org, I am humbled. And remember, please, that nothing you listen to on the horn would happen without WhiteRoseSociety.org. It is separately funded and separately maintained from anything that the Horn does. So please bear that in mind. We can both use your help, and lots of it. Of course, the other half of the equation that keeps this going is Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net and coalriverwind.org. Without you and your contributions and without the sponsorship of Coal River Mountain Watch, this brave little experiment in new media simply would not exist. The folks at Coal River Mountain Watch are the bravest, hardest working people I know. They never slow down. They seldom take a break because they know the urgency of the cause for which they fight. And they know that it extends far beyond the confines of Appalachia to the world writ large. And they are amazing people. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to a Friday that is here in the hills and hollers of almost level West, by God, Virginia. A beautiful one. Oh, this has been one of those springtime days that is very like a kiss. It has been beautiful here, but being as how it is beautiful, we are told that it's all going to turn to crap by Sunday. So, it's been one of those enjoy it while you can kind of days. Golden light streaming through the windows. My, the windows of the south-facing studios here bathed in warm spring light. A day to remind you that better days are coming. Not just weather-wise, but world-wise. It can get better. We're in charge of whether it gets better, but it can most assuredly get better. For my money, one of those things that will make it all immensely better, at least for this nation, is the Employees Free Choice Act, EFCA. Of course, you know I feel that way about it. You know, it was just in the last week that we found out that the senator from Walmart, I mean Arkansas, Blanche Lincoln, a Democrat in name only, had decided to side with her corporate masters instead of working people, not only in Arkansas, but across the country as well. Blanche Lincoln sees no need for unions. Blanche Lincoln sees no need for a level playing field. Blanche Lincoln said recently that the EFCA would divide America too much in the fight against the recession, the depression, the Wall Street generated collapse of our economy. Blanche Lincoln is, in a word, an idiot. I hate to speak so strongly like that, especially about a Democrat, but there's not a whole lot that's really Democratic about Blanche Lincoln. She is, after all, a member of that group of mugwumps, that Evan Bayh gang of moderates whose sole goal is to make sure that nothing liberal, nothing progressive happens in America. And she's proud of it. And she's proud of the fact that she set off one of